Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Another reminder that on Wednesday's show, we will take your calls on what was good about the decade of the O's. And we have a web page up right now for you to make a list. What was good about the decade that's about to end? Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. We realize this is the decade that roughly began with 9/11, roughly ended with a financial meltdown, and had Hurricane Katrina in the middle. That's a lot of mega bad right there. But we don't want to overlook the positive. So go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show to post to our list of what was good about this decade. And we'll talk about it on Wednesday's show. Tomorrow, by the way, we'll talk about the words of the decade. This year, according to one dictionary, the word of the year was unfriend. And we'll talk about the various words of the O's on tomorrow's show. But if you tried to negotiate Midtown sidewalks last week, it might have occurred to you that human beings aren't that different from ants or bees or other swarming creatures. My next guest, Len Fisher, makes just that case and looks for ways we can learn from those animals in his new book, The Perfect Swarm, The Science of Complexity in Everyday Life. Len Fisher, welcome to WNYC.
Oh, Brian, great to speak to you, and greetings from sunny Australia to the New Yorkers.
Sunny Australia. It's summertime there, isn't it?
It absolutely is. Thank goodness it's raining. We're avoiding all the bushfires.
And it's the middle of the night there, too, so we appreciate you getting up to do this. And you opened the book with a series
It's great to talk with you.
A series of photos showing similar organizational patterns in animate and inanimate objects, like sand dunes and tiger stripes and sunflowers and galaxies. Does the complexity that you're studying not just operate in animals?
Complexity is everywhere. But when I started this, I'm a scientist, and what I do is I try to write books about how scientists see the problems of everyday life. And, of course, like you were just saying, that the biggest problem that we face is that we live in such a complex society. And how do we steer our way through all the complexities? And the thing that people have been finding, the scientists who actually study it, I'm a scientist who just tries to understand it, what they've been finding is that the local interactions, the interaction with your neighbor, is in the end what produces all the complexity, and that applies just as much to us as it does to ants and birds and bees and all the rest of them. And if you look, say, at a flock of birds flying in the sky, people used to think that birds had ESP, you know, extrasensory perception, but they just couldn't see how the whole flock was able to fly as one unless they had some sort of communication. But it works out, all they do is they follow extremely simple rules.
Yeah, that part of your book was interesting. The three basic rules: avoid bumping into others, move in the average direction of those near you, and move toward the average position of those near you. The same thing could apply to human beings in Times Square on New Year's Eve.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's basically follow the fish or the bird in front and keep up with the bird or the fish alongside you. If you do the same sort of thing when you're walking in a crowd, you'll do okay, but you can do even better. Because when you look at crowds and look at the way that they act, what you see is that as a crowd gets more and more dense, and you think it'd be harder and harder to work your way through it, right? Well, in fact, when the crowds get sufficiently dense, and you've probably seen this, suddenly they seem to break into rivers. So these local interactions of people all keeping next to each other suddenly turn the crowd into two streams going in opposite direction, and it flows very efficiently. I tried to make that happen once. I mean, this is an experiment you can do in the street with a few friends, and it works really brilliantly. You know, if you're walking in a moderately dense crowd and people are bumping into each other or trying to dodge each other, instead of trying to spread out with a few of your friends, start to form a really tight little group. Because when the crowd gets sufficiently dense and it suddenly goes into these flowing rivers, you and your friends can make the crowd do that just by gradually moving closer and closer to each other. And suddenly, you're walking in a stream, and it's wonderful.
Len Fisher with us from Australia, talking about his book, The Perfect Swarm, The Science of Complexity in Everyday Life. Do you think you've ever been part of a perfect swarm? We have just a few minutes for phone calls for him at 212-433-WNYC, 433 9692. And you write about the ways that bees follow invisible leaders. You call them invisible leaders, and that we do too. How does that work?
I'll tell you what I'd like to do is I'd like to swap your jobs, because you're so good at summarizing books. The invisible leaders thing is very interesting. It turns out that if you've got a crowd, a group sort of moving, and nobody really knows where they're going, if you've just got a few people within the crowd who've got a definite idea of where they're going, even though the others don't know who those people are, they'll still tend to follow them. With bees, when bees are looking for, say, a source of food, they'll have you've heard of the waggle dance, these bees that come back and sort of dance in front of a hive and so on to tell the others where things are. Well, only a few of them actually know where they're going. So when the group sets off, these few don't even get in the front of the swarm. They get in the middle of the swarm. None of the others know who they are. But just because a few are moving, you're in business. There's an experiment that was done with some students, which was very, very revealing. What they were told to do was just to sort of walk around within an area, keeping close to the others. And the area had a series of cards, A, B, C, D, E, etc., around the side of the area. But just a couple of the students, I think it was about 5%, had secret instructions to wander around, but to end up in front of one of these cards, say J. And after 10 minutes, it turned out that almost all of the students had ended up in front of the same card. You have invisible leaders. And you can do this, again, as long as you don't tell the others that people don't always like being invisibly led. But if you have a definite idea of where you're going, whether it's in a committee or whether it's walking in the street, if you have that definite idea, don't say anything but just head in that direction. You'll find that a great number of the people with you, unless they've got specific agendas of their own, which is not unlikely, that's where further complexity comes in, but most of the people will follow the invisible leader. It even applies to orchestras. There's an orchestra that doesn't have a conductor, and it works perfectly well.
Chris in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. It's a fascinating topic, and from my experience, I was motorcycling through India for months, and I've never experienced such a swarm mentality and aspect of trust as on the motorbikes going through India with no lanes, total trust of your neighbor. And I'd just like to share that I'm coming from the States with clearly delineated lines and rules and obligations. The swarm mentality was perfect in India.
That's pretty interesting. And of course, go ahead, Len.
Yes, I've been in India and I've experienced that. I've even experienced on a dual carriageway looking up to see a truck coming straight at me because it was taking a shortcut. I think the point in India is that individuals expect other individuals to follow rather different rules that we do in Australia or you do in the States. In the States, you've got one very simple rule that gives you the complexity of driving on the highway, and that's keep on the right. And just keeping on the right gives you, if a visiting Martian came and had a look, they'd remark on the complexity of all these cars not hitting each other just through following the one simple rule.
Len,
Indians follow one simple rule. If you've got a loud horn, then it's your right of way.
Len Fisher, author of The Perfect Swarm, The Science of Complexity in Everyday Life. And you do also look at the downside of group behavior, like groupthink, which you see is explaining the U.S. invasion of Iraq after 9/11 and the Bernie Madoff investors. So you see a difference between group intelligence and swarm intelligence. But you write about the way that computers and social networking can enhance this swarming intelligence, and yet in the case of cell phones and iPods, they don't prevent some of that self-organization. Explain that.
I think you just did a pretty good job yourself, right? There's a phenomenon which is called the intelligent mob, where we can use our iPhones to make long-range contacts. The way that it works, you've heard of the 6 degrees of separation, the idea that we're all no more than 6 steps away from anyone else in the world if we can just find the pathway. Well, the recent research, and I have to say it was done, a lot of it was done by an Australian called Duncan Watts, and now works for one of your big computer companies. What Duncan found was that the 6 degrees of separation works most effectively if you have just a few long-range links, like the link between you and me now. See, I wouldn't be able to reach a lot of people in New York because we've got this one long-range link as we're talking that opens me up to all of your network of contacts, which is, of course, a very big one. So the long-range links are the thing that you have to look at when you're trying to establish a big network. So the idea of this smart mobs, as they're called, they've often happened places like the Philippines and so on, where there's been public action against something repressive. By having a few cell phones through the crowd able to make long-range links, suddenly you can get the whole crowd acting as a single unit. I know that's also happened in Taiwan, and I think it's happened in the States, but I don't recollect the specific example of that.
Right, that's interesting. As long as you don't all bump into each other crossing the street, negating your whole swarm theory because people are so locked into their iPods or their cell phones that they don't pay any attention to what's in front of their eyes.
there certainly is that. But the main thing is that these very simple rules of interacting with your neighbor what lead to complexity, and what I've tried to do is to look for simple rules that will help you to steer your way through the complexity, to make simple decisions fast, for example.
So in our last 30 seconds or so, give me one or two of the lessons. I know one is to copy anyone with a better idea. What else?
I had a PhD student who said, if you see a good idea, steal it. I think that's exactly right. If you see someone who's being successful, then, of course, I mean, that sounds so obvious. It's not quite as obvious as it sounds. But these very simple rules, if you have to make a decision between two things and you know you've heard of one but not of the other, go for the one you've heard about. Simple things like that. They really work.
They call that thinking inside the box, don't they? All right. We will leave
it
there.
Thank you indeed.
With Len Fisher, author
Brian,
of...
Thanks very much for talking with me.
Thank you very much for coming on with us. From Australia, Len Fisher,
You're
author
welcome.
Of The Perfect Swarm, The Science of Complexity in Everyday Life.